Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Church Multiplication Collective podcast. This is a podcast designed to help you multiply like never before. I'm your host, Ed Love, and I oversee the Church Multiplication Collective, which is an intentional community of Wesleyan leaders committed to discovering, developing, and deploying workers for the Lord's harvest. I am excited today because we are going to be joining Julie Pinta, who is a church planner out in Fort Collins, Colorado, and she just planted the Grove Church, which is entering into its fifth year, and Julie has some great wisdom to share from us. So welcome, Julie.
Thank you.
Howdy.
Howdy.
How's it going out there, Colorado?
Sunny and beautiful.
Sunny and beautiful. No snow?
No.
I heard it snowed just like a few weeks ago, and it's like summer.
It did snow a few weeks ago, right before my birthday in May. Yeah.
That's lovely.
All I wanted to do was go on a hike, and not so much.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us today, podcast listeners. Julie's going to be sharing her top three lessons learned while church planning. So this is going to be some good wisdom. And as always, our lessons learned are usually coming from that place where maybe we didn't do it right in the first, you know, the first time. And we learned a few lessons how we would do it differently. And so Julie's got some great wisdom to share. And so, Julie, why don't we just begin by you just filling us in on the backstory of the Grove Church and just how you were brought into this new church plant.
Sure. I was working as a youth pastor in Michigan and had been feeling like my time there was done, which I wasn't super excited about because I really liked my job and the church that I was working at. But I had people coming up out of nowhere from every direction saying that I should be a church planter, and I kept saying no. But I got suckered into going through a church plant assessment center with Janetta Herrera and went through the process. And at the end of it, in a meeting, they looked at me and said, "You know that you're being called a church plant, and so it's time that you get over the fact that you're scared and you're young and you're a female and you're single, and you do it anyway." And I knew she was right. I knew they were right. And so I went down that journey of looking into and seeking out where God wanted me to plant. And I got into contact with the organization or the denomination out here, and they were wanting to plant a church out in Fort Collins because it's a college town. There's a lot of young professionals, and that was the age that I happened to be at the time and still am. And thought I could relate to the community and it being really active and outdoorsy. And so moved out here to start the church. I didn't know anybody, didn't have a team secured at the time. Developed a team, they moved out here, and it did not go very well with the team. There was a lot of problems on my end as well of leadership and trying to establish trust. And the team dissolved. And so a lot of these things that I've learned came from my failings in those areas of leading in the very beginning and trying to lead a team that didn't really trust me and didn't really want to go where we were going. And so because of that, I became really intentional of growing as a leader and figuring out what I needed to do in future hirings with staff members and team members to make sure that those types of situations wouldn't happen again. And since then, I've had really awesome staff members and team experiences, and we're really close. We fight for each other. We believe the best in each other, and it's been an entirely different experience since then.
Yeah, awesome. So why don't you just tell us where you're at now? So you've kind of, you had a rough start, which does happen in church planning. I love the fact that you stuck to it and you demonstrated the grit factor in church planning, right? And because it doesn't always go the way we had planned, and sometimes God just, he's doing something in us. That's what I'm always struck with. Like, there's always something that God wants to do with us when we go through those hard times. And right. It sounds like you took that on and you listened to God, you transformed, you grew, developed, and you stayed faithful to the original call. And now you're in a new place, actually just now entering into a new physical place too. New facilities come your way. And why don't you just kind of fill us into where you're at now and how the ministry's going and what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah, we are in the process of probably our biggest change we've ever had as a church. We've been renting space from another church the past couple of years. And we knew that we needed to change where we were meeting. One, because it's an older church and it's very high church looking, stained glass windows. And our demographic is younger, and we're reaching a lot of people that are either de-churched or have never been churched before. And it can kind of be a barrier for them to connect. And so also we had a later time, and it was conflicting with nap time and lunch and Broncos games, which start at 11. And so during the fall, we just were destroyed during Broncos games. So we knew that in our doing our research with people that had a good experience but never came back, they said the time was really hard. And so we're moving into this brand new location that's an event space, and it's gorgeous. It's in the heart of Old Town, which is a really big cultural spot for our community, and we have a 10 o'clock service time, so that's really awesome. We're still pretty small, but we're seeing a lot of growth in people. We do a lot of leadership development and discipleship type things, and I have three people on staff that are all part-time, but they're all rock stars.
Awesome. Sounds like a good scenario now, and God's using you there, that's for sure. So what about the Grove? That metaphor that's in your church name, like what is that? What's your picture there?
Yeah, vision? So Fort Collins is very granola, very interested in the outdoors and shopping local. And so we tried to pick a name that the community would relate to and think was neat. So a green space in a community is like a park or a nature area that provides places for people to hang out and do life together. And also it creates literal health for the community, because a green space, the trees in it, they clean the air, they reduce cancer rates and different things like that. And so we said, wouldn't it be cool if that's what we were as a church as well, as we were this area that provided community for people, but also literally made our community a better place. And so we talk a lot about what it means for us to be a blessing to our community, to add value to Fort Collins, to try to make our community a better place. And that's why we picked the name The Grove.
Mm. Love it.
Thank you.
And that shows you right there that you've already got the mindset of you're developing a church that is for your community, you know, and you were very intentional about exegeting your culture so that people could connect with you. So that's a good lesson. But that's not really the lesson that you wanted to talk about here today. We got three lessons learned while church planning, and you're going to take a moment just to share those things with us and the audience. Why don't you go ahead and begin with your first one? What would you say? Your first one out of, we could probably do like 100 good ones.
Right.
We're just trying to do three today. We can have a part two and a part three and a part four. But let's go with the top three here. What would you say your first lesson learned is?
It would be along the lines of equipping your staff and building trust as a team. Because of what I dealt with my first team. And so I went on a quest to say, how can I make better hiring choices in the future? How can I be a better leader as the lead pastor? How can I make my team be this team that works together and has trust and synergy, and you just really feel like you're supported by your team? And so I read a lot of books. I mean, one of the most helpful ones was, you know, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And we read a lot of Bill Hybels stuff. He speaks a lot about really fighting for your team and putting your team first and making the decisions that make them feel believed in. And so one of the things that I did was I put together kind of that, I have a dream document of what a staff would look like, the staff of my dreams would look like, and wrote down some values as far as what that would be. And some of the things that really played into that as well was those, the three C's of the character, the chemistry, and the competency. And I think a lot of people hire first and foremost off of competency. Not that I think that competency isn't important, but I think that there's a lot of things that can be learned. And if you have the ability to learn, then that's, I don't necessarily care as much as if you know how to do it right now on a staff level, because I really think that those character component and the chemistry component are in my book, my personal book, more important. Character shines through and it comes out. And if I have a staff member that's doing something immoral or unethical, that's going to come to the surface, and it's going to make people in our church lose trust with us as leaders. And I've seen that happen. And then that chemistry component of when I'm talking with somebody about being on staff, a lot of it is having them describe what their dream church would be before I start talking about what the Grove looks like, because if it looks a lot different than what the Grove looks like, we're just going to be butting heads as far as the direction that we're going.
Right.
And so when I start the process of hiring people, I spend a lot of time talking about, you know, here's who we are. And it doesn't mean that this is the right church in every context and in every demographic, but this is who we are and very clearly what we're about. And if you're on board with that, then great. But if not, then tell me what you want, and maybe I can refer you to another church that I think you'd be a better fit. And then I talk about our staff values, and I'm very clear about them. And then again, I say, is this something that, you know, you think that you can be on board with. And so that's been my different hiring process from that. And one of the questions that I ask myself is, and maybe this sounds really selfish, but do I think that my staff member would take a bullet for me? And do I think that they trust me and respect me enough that during those times when things get heated as a staff, and when we make each other mad and we have disagreements, are we still going to end up wanting to work together? And are we still going to be on the same team? And so that's kind of how I make my decisions as far as who I'm hiring. Some of those hires have been internal from people that I've mentored and I've developed, and I think they're awesome, and they end up coming on staff. Some of them have been from a random email of, hey, or do you know anyone that's hiring? Are you hiring? And I'm like, I don't have any money to pay you, but I'd love to hear your story and hear what you're looking for and see if I can lead you in a direction. And then one of those conversations turned into, wow, we're really on the same page. We have the same beliefs, the same passions. And so let's find a way to make this work and bring you on staff. And we did. So I don't know. I mean, I have my list of staff values that I could share with you if you want them. But I think some of the things that, are most helpful are we talk through communication pieces too, and we have little phrases, and we call it our corporate language that we repeat really often that everybody knows. And and we don't just say, hey, we value this, like we actually value it. And some of those things are saying the last 10%. I don't know if are familiar with that concept, but it's the idea of a lot of times in communication, you say maybe what is the easiest thing to say is bothering you, but the part that's really hard to say, you don't say, but it really never clears up the issue. And so as a staff, we say, you know, hey, I'm about to say the last 10%. And so, you know, it's not going to be pleasant to hear. And, but you say it and you talk through it, and then you're able to actually move on and not resent each other. Yeah, another one of our big ones is believing the best in each other. And if there's something that came across the wrong way, we ask or we say, hey, this kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and I found myself questioning your intentions or where your motive, where you're coming from. And so can you explain to me where you were coming from so I'm not assuming the worst, you know, because I really want to trust you and I really want to believe in you. Another thing that we talk a lot about is that we don't talk about each other outside of, there's no gossip with other people. We are a united front. We kind of in parenting, you know, we're not going to let other people play us off of each other. And so there's just zero tolerance for gossip. And a lot of that leads to a staff where you really feel like they've got your back. You trust them wholeheartedly. And once I make a decision and we're all moving forward, I know that they're on board and they believe in the direction that we're going. We're really good. We've developed into really good friends as well. We're really supportive of each other personally. And so it's just been a really great experience with my staff now.
Yeah. And obviously that's coming out of some things that maybe didn't go so well.
Exactly.
You had to go in there and figure out, okay, how do we build these teams? Because it is complicated. And for those future church planners out there, just so you know, there is this tendency in the early stage to kind of have the attitude or perspective of like, I just need anybody. I just need some warm bodies. If you're alive, come join my team. Because I need people, and you do need people, but sometimes we can either bypass those formation stages in a relationship where it's like, hey, let's set the boundaries here, let's build the trust factor first, you know, before I hand things over to you or before I invite you into a decision making process, and so. Either you feel rushed because you got a lot to do, and so you just kind of skip over that whole phase and hope that it works out. And then so oftentimes you recognize later, you're like, ooh, we should have taken some more time to define that. I should have written things out on paper. I should have had a ministry description for everybody. Like, that was this is funny because that's what I was for my first church plant, my second church plant. After my first one, I realized I got to have a ministry description. I had to go back and redo ministry descriptions, which that's clunky and complicated anyways, because it's like you're giving people something after that they already signed up for, and it's just kind of a weird process, and some people don't like it. And then for the second church plant, though, I was like, day one, everybody, yes. No matter what it is, if it's the littlest job, you're going to have a written ministry description.
Yes.
And that was just a big part of just creating clarity. So I think there's that tendency, you know, for us to fall into. And then I think another big thing that you kind of hit on was, it's almost like, you know, use the word trust, but it's almost like your desire when you said, you know, you want someone to take a bullet for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's a true friend, as Jesus said, would lay down their life for you. But you're talking about loyalty.
Right.
That's a high value. And that's coming, you know, and different people have different levels of, you know, their values for loyalty may be different, right? So you probably have a higher value personally. And so you want that from other people. But in the context of church planning, you're out there, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, I don't like to overuse military imagery, but you're out there on the battlefield, front lines.
Well, and you are
taking questions. You're taking bullets.
You are.
And you can't question whether or not, you know, your brother or sister next to you is with you, or did they just go to the back bunker and hide out and leave you all alone, you know? So, any thoughts on that?
I think there's a lot of times as a lead pastor where you're going to have somebody coming up and complaining to one of your staff members about you and your decisions that you're making. And, you know, I want the type of staff members that aren't going to let, you know, and a lot of times maybe that's it's inaccurate information because it's coming from a third party. And so, you know, we talk a lot about the Matthew 18, go to the source. And so our staff is kind of trained to say, if anybody, hey, if this doesn't actually relate to me, and if you have a problem with Julie, or if you have a problem with one of the other pastors, you need to go talk to them directly. And, you know, they're really approachable. They'll hear you out, but you know, I wasn't involved in the situation and doesn't involve me. So go to the source.
Yeah.
And there's ways that you can, even before, if you're hiring internally, you know, if there's any question of if somebody really respects you or really trusts you or believes in you, if there's any doubt in your mind that they're not that person, and even if they're extremely competent, don't hire them, because it's going to derail you, and you're going to be trying to move forward, and they're always going to be questioning your motives or your heart or your intentions. But a lot of that can, you know, once you're on a staff, a lot of that, it builds as you lead well, and as you show your team that you've got their back. I always make sure to say, you know, if somebody compliments me on something that happened and I had nothing to do with it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was Nicole, or that was Tyler, or that was Jensley. And I'll pass it along to them that you thought that was great, rather than just saying thank you, because I delegate a lot, and a lot of it I have nothing to do with.
Yeah.
And if I take those praises that are being said, or I'll do a lot of, I guess, like bragging on them when they're not there. Mm-hmm. And then that gets, because things always get back to people. So if you're mm-hmm. bragging on your staff members when they're not there, they're going to hear from somebody else, oh, Julie was saying all these great things about you. And there's lots of ways to make your staff feel like you're in their corner as well. And I think a lot of that is the clarity component of, we talk a lot about, we have corporate language and we have a document that kind of explains that, those assumptive phrases that we use inside of our staff that people might not understand if they're not in our staff. And so if we bring on a new person, we go over that with them. But I think that also helps us feel solidarity as a team to say, here are these things, or here are these values that we have that are really important. But here are the ways that we work as a staff that you'll need to understand. Like one example is we have this thing called hats, and we have different hat colors. And so if you have an idea, but you're not really, it's really just a brainstorming thing. You say, hey, I have a white hat idea. And it makes people not get defensive. If you're saying, hey, I have a white hat about this thing that you're doing. If they're like, hey, I think you should do this, it's a little bit different than, hey, I have this idea, you know, I don't even know if I have a strong opinion about it. And then we have an orange hat that's like, hey, this is really important to me, and I would really appreciate you all hear me out on this. And then I have a red hat because I'm the leader, and I get to every once in a while, we do a lot as a team, we do a lot of thinking as a team and brainstorming as a team, but every once in a while there will be something that you know, somebody might not be in full agreement on, and I just say, I'm making a red hat decision. And I've done it twice in like 4 years, so it happens very rarely. But the team knows, and they trust me enough, and we've developed that trust that if I make a red hat decision from there on in, they're on board, and they go, I don't understand maybe the full scope of why we're making this decision, but I've seen Julie's character and her leadership decisions enough to know that I'm going to trust this, even though I don't really fully understand it, or I'm not fully on board yet. And then we move forward. So,
wow.
I don't really know if that answers your question.
No, that's good. That's really helpful. And I think that brings up this other question. We may have hit your second one too. It may have overlapped with your second lesson. But maybe you just gave us like 15 right there too. So this is going to turn into 100. The second lesson, how would you describe that now?
Okay. So the second one is more about your serve team or your volunteer staff. So in the beginning, we started having volunteers of, hey, we need people to set up the stage. We would move in our own set. We need people to run sound. We need people to run Pro Presenter, children's ministry, all those different things. And it just wasn't good. I mean, we'd have people showing up late, or we'd have no shows. We'd have you know, and then you'd call them and they'd be like, you know, I'm volunteering and I don't understand why you're getting on my back about this if I'm not there one Sunday. And we're like, well, it's not about you not being here. It's about the fact that you just didn't show up. Or we would just have people like complaining or not really, you know, we had job descriptions and a description of how the stage was supposed to be set up, but it wasn't being set up with excellence. And so we said, we were just getting frustrated. And then I had to look back at myself and say, this is my fault. I'm not telling them who I want them to be and how I want them to be and how they can win. And so we decided to start having a 5-minute check-in meeting for our volunteers before we started setting up in the mornings. And we came up with about 6 values and stuff like consistency of like, hey, we really need you to be on time. And if you're scheduled, we really need you to be here. Adding value, excellence, prayer covered ministry, teamwork. And so we said, hey, this is who we want you to be. And this is what the dream team looks like for the serve team. Mm. And we started talking about basically every week we would just rotate through those values and give a teaching lesson or a story of somebody living out those values. Yeah. And it just totally changed our serve team. And I mean, now people are bringing ideas of saying, hey, you know, I want to add value. And so have you thought about upgrading this part of the coffee area? And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. Let's do that. We haven't had a no show in, I don't know, a year or two of somebody just being, you know. So, I mean, and people are, I have a positive attitude now and they like being there and it's more fun. So that's what number two is about, of just saying as a leader, it's your job to cast the vision of who you want any team to be and to continue to communicate that until they become that. Yeah. And it's a better experience for everybody because people aren't grumbling, you know, they're having fun and,
oh, that's so good. And that's a sign that your team is healthy and people are enjoying it. Expectations are clear though, you know, and you got to, you know, as you said, you know, we do it every week. This is just our routine. We're going to take a little time, talk about our values. And that's getting it to the point where it's getting ingrained in them. Mm-hmm. And so good. How about your third lesson learned?
Yeah. So the third one, I'm not really sure what to call it. We kind of made up for a name for it on our on our staff, and I'm calling it cascade blockage. That is what is not to do. So a lot of this, I think, came from some insecurities of my first team experiences of feeling like I had some knowledge and some things to share, but it wasn't really received well. Mm. And so with my staff, I was great about teaching them these lessons that I had learned. And with our interns, one of our big things is I have this list of like, I think it's like 67 lessons that I've learned in my years of ministry. And I share those with all of my staff and my interns. And but that's kind of where it ended. And I had a meeting with a guy that kind of like, you know, I never felt like I was winning with him. And he just went to the church. And one of the things that he said to me as he was moving far away, he said, I feel like you're only living out to 10% of your potential as a leader. And this is a guy that's going to my church. And he was like, and that's why I keep coming, because I see it in you, but I feel like you're hiding it. And I don't know why. And I don't know why you're not living it out more, but I would love to see what Julie, even at like 40 or 50% capacity would be like. Wow. And I was so mad and insulted and offended, yeah. But I took some time to think through what he said. And I was like, gosh, unfortunately, I think he's right. And I think that I've been living in some areas of insecurity in my leadership because of what happened when I first moved out here and planted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I started to look at what I could do differently. And part of that was I was the cascade, as you think about it, like a waterfall that trickles down. I had it clogged. I had it blocked past staff. And so I said, okay, I have these lessons and they're kind of hard to fit them into messages. And I have these ideas on leadership and life and, you know, how to live an effective life and a successful life, but I don't really know how to get them past the staff. And so I kind of have gone on this quest of how can I unclog the cascade and start to try to teach more of those lessons in finding a way to bring them into messages, even if they're just part of the message, not the entire message, or bringing them more into the serve team trainings that we do, like I was talking about. I've started doing a leadership team the past two summers with a group of people that are really invested and loyal to the church and show some desire to be leaders. And so I've done a lot of that down to them. Or even just when I'm doing pastoral counseling of sharing these lessons and just trying to say, you know what, God has given me, I've gone to the Global Leadership Summit every summer. I read so many books. I really try to grow in my development. And if I'm just not sharing these things that I've learned, I'm really not being a good steward of these lessons. And so that's something that we talk about as a staff of how can you unblock that cascade of knowledge and wisdom and information to the people that you're leading so that you're not just holding it to yourself. And you know, that might not be something that a lot of people relate to because maybe they're a lot better at it than I am of bringing it to more people than just their staff. But that was something that I was definitely guilty of.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. And I like that name that you gave that principle. You might need to write a book on that. Cascade leadership or something.
Yeah.
Cascade church planning. There's, I think it's interesting that you bring that up because, and that guy that came up to you and said, I want more out of you, you know, like you're only at 10%.
that's how embarrassing, huh?
That's so offensive and embarrassing. Like, oh, that's pretty terrible. But he saw something in you.
Yeah.
So he was discerning enough to know that you got more in you. And what I think this is kind of draws us out is that, you know, people really are looking for leaders in their life. They're looking for leadership and they want to be made better by their leadership. And so, you giving them that, you know, it's not a burden, you know, as you present those things. The other side of that though is maybe, especially in Christian circles, maybe we create a cascade blockage because we're scared of coming across as prideful.
Right.
Or maybe it's our like, oh, I'm still kind of young and I don't know if that'll be well received. I need to kind of just take the humble, quiet, you know, route and not share. Or present some form of, you know, knowledge to somebody. And, you know, I don't think that is prideful. Like you said, it's not being a good steward of the gifts that God has given you.
Right.
And the wisdom that he's given you. I think there's ways that we come across that could be perceived as prideful. But it's not prideful to lay out knowledge and present things in a way that, you know, could be helpful for someone else.
Right.
So, No, go ahead.
I think God convicted me along those lines and said, you know, you are their pastor. Like they're coming to your church. Wow. They're putting themselves under your leadership. And when you aren't sharing these things that you've learned, then you're not doing your job of discipling them. And that is an honor that we have as pastors is to take advantage of helping them grow. And these are they're timeless lessons. They're not things that I've come up with on my own. They're things that I've learned from talking to really great mentors. I mean, the hat thing came from another church that has been really great with giving me mentorship. And so, you know, we just really feeling like it is our job to disciple these people. And if I'm not, then I'm not really living out my full capacity as a pastor. And I remember thinking, when I started doing it more often and unblocking that cascade blockage, I remember thinking, I bet all these people are like, wow, I really didn't know that she knew as much as she did. Yeah. And so, just trying to find ways to do that. And again, I mean, I think a lot of these things is as far as church planters, is that our insecurities really hinder us from leading as we're supposed to. And
absolutely,
the more that we can work through those insecurities or get counseling for them, be honest with them, the more that we're going to lead to our full capacity. Because I, you know, the cascade blockage was happening because of fear, not because of any other good reason.
Yeah. And you nailed it when you said it's our insecurities mm-hmm. that hold us back. And that's so good. So good. And we can be who God made us to be. And that when you get to that place where you can, it is so freeing. And I know I've lived that transition myself and love being in the place where it's like, I know who I am. I know who God's called me to be, and I'm going to be it, and I'm going to have fun doing it. So sounds like that's where you're at too. And so good when you get there. Any final words for us, Julie?
Not really. Don't quit.
Don't quit. Another word of wisdom. Love it. Don't quit. It's worth it, isn't it? Seeing the fruit through the years and taking on those challenges. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us, being honest with us, and for giving us some great lessons learned on the journey of church planting.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, everyone, you've been tuning in to Julie Pinta, and she's at the Grove Church in Fort Collins, Colorado, if you want to check it out and stay up to date on what's happening. Thanks so much, Julie. We're going to sign out, and we'll see you next time on the Church Multiplication Collective podcast.